Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Scientists know a lot about how trees communicate, but few know how to get it across like German forester Peter Wohlleben. He spent years in the woods and in the research. Now he's telling the story of what goes on with the trees. A lot, he says. They're social. This hour on Point, the hidden life of trees. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do you know what's going on in the woods with the trees? Talking, smelling, counting, learning, remembering. Do you know the secret life of trees? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Salford, England is Peter Wohlleben. He spent over 20 years working for the Forestry Commission in Germany and now runs an environmentally friendly woodland in Hummel, Germany, just outside Cologne. His book is The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, Discoveries from a Secret World. It's made him a sensation in Germany, a kind of tree whisperer. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Peter Wohlleben, welcome to On Point. Very good to have you here.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi. When we walk through the forest, if we're not thinking about it, what are we missing?
A lot. It's like you're walking through an elephant herd and see just biorobotics and not the wonderful beings that they are.
You began your career in the forestry industry, and by that I mean finding trees in the woods to cut down and send off to be turned into lumber, spruce and beech and oak and pine. You became disenchanted with that work and came to a deeper interest in trees. Tell us about that.
Yeah, as a forester, I knew about trees as much as a butcher about animals. And that's what a forester is, a tree butcher, let's say like this.
A tree butcher.
Butcher, great. Sorry.
Okay.
Tree
okay.
Butcher. As a little child, I always wanted to be a nature protector. I know now that that is not a profession, but deep in my heart, when I finished my study as a forestry, I realized that I destroy forests by treating them like the conventional forest industry does.
Now you write about trees in a very different way than a traditional forester. You talk about them being very social. You talk about them in very kind of human terms, talking, feeling, suckling their young, and more. When you talk about trees talking to one another, what do you mean?
I translate the scientific terms. The research that have been done since 40 or 50 years is really amazing, but no one realizes it because, the scientific speech is so dry, so full of technical terms that no one wants to read it. And I translated it. I made my own discoveries. For example, one day I stumbled over a mossy stone and moss-covered stone, and after bending down, I realized that this was the remnant of a very old stump, which the tree has been felled about 400 or 500 years ago, and this stump was still living. And how could that be without any green leaf? And the only explanation was that this old fellow was supported by its neighbors via root connections, and they are pumping sugar solution to this old guy. And that was the first point where I realized trees are social beings. They don't fight against each other for light and for water and for whatsoever, what we are all told, but they are a big family which support each other.
You're suggesting there that the trees around this 400 or 500-year-old stump were actively keeping it alive by somehow coursing sugars toward the stump. Why would they do that in scientific or evolutionary terms? You call them family. Okay, maybe so. What would the reason be?
Yeah, the reason is a single tree is not a forest. And just as a forest, they can cool down, they can bring the temperature down about 3 degrees in comparison to a managed forest. They have more humid climate, which they like, and within there are more tough. And single trees suffer when they are lonely. They seem to be healthy when we look at them. They seem to be fit because they grow so fast. But in reality, those lonely trees won't be very old. And so within a forest, trees can be as old as 10,000 years.
And you see them as healthier and longer lived when they're together in that way. What are the things that trees do together that they might or don't do when they're single, when they're on their own?
If, for example, that they talk. Trees have several ways to communicate, like we have. There's one thing that is a chemical way with dents. So, for example, when a tree is attacked by an insect, it feels the pain. And it reacts with electrical signals and then with pumping poisonous substances in the bark and in the leaves. But it warns also the surrounding neighbors so that they can prepare in time. And when a tree is lonely, he's not able to recognize anything. And suddenly it is attacked. The time to react is too short for a tree. Trees are very, very slow beings.
So somehow when the tree is attacked by, let's say, a parasite of some kind, you said they respond to that, but they also communicate to trees around them, watch out. How do they do that?
Yeah, they do that. They do it via the root network. They are connected with their roots, and there they send out chemical and electrical signals like our nerve system. But the roots are not reaching every member of the community, and therefore there's a fungi network. There are thin filaments growing through the soil, and those fungi are bring the electrical communication to the next trees or trees which are much farther away, so every member of the society knows what's going on in the forest.
So there's even more than the tree life at work here, the life surrounding the trees. Peter Vuleben, we've got callers for you already from all over the place. Detroit, Michigan, Magnanimous is calling. Mag, you're on with Peter.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah.
I was wondering, I believe you just touched on it, but from what I understand, mycelia networks are some of the largest organisms on the planet. And underneath trees, they do communicate, share information, and nourishment, chemicals, and food. I wonder what your guest, has he studied that? Has he come across anything like that?
Mycelium, is that a kind of fungus? Peter Vuleben, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it's a kind of fungus, and it's not just me who studied things like that. There's strong research being done in the last decades about this, but it's not known to the public because it reads very hard.
Why would a fungus serve as a communications network for a tree?
Fungus is not able to feed itself, so it has to get food from other beings, for example, from trees. And for getting something, you have to pay something. It's like among humans. And the fungus is bringing news to other trees, and therefore it receives sugar solution. It's up to one third of the whole photosynthesis that a tree makes that it has to pay for those news.
And so there's a kind of mutually beneficial relationship here.
Right, right.
That makes possible, in your view, what you call a families of trees. When you say a family, do you mean just a whole forest, or do you mean something more discrete?
No, it's something more discrete. It's, for example, mother trees. They are together with their child, and that seems too human in expression, but mother trees, that's a new research being done on the University of British Columbia. They are able to know which seedling is their own, and then they connect especially with those seedlings, with their own kids, let's say like this, and they even have more beloved kids than others, favorites.
And do they somehow give special nurturing or nourishment to those offspring trees?
Right. And the less beloved child will get less. So, for example, when they are on a ground which is stony and they don't have any chance to grow up, then they are not supported like child or seedlings, which grows in better conditions. So the mother tree is able to make decisions.
You know, the time scale of the life of trees is very often quite different from the human time scale. If we saw all of this activity speeded up to our pace of living, would we recognize more clearly what's going on with trees, Peter?
Yeah, I think so. For example, electrical signal within our nerve system will travel within milliseconds for 1 meter. And when you say see a tree needs for 1 centimeter minutes for an electrical signal. So trees are very, very slow. And so that's perhaps the reason why they have to get so old, because they react very slow and all things are going on very slow. And so we don't have to admire trees for getting so old, because their whole lifespan is a completely slowness.
Do you think this all this amounts to intelligence, or is that going too far?
For the moment, it's just a guess, and we don't know even where a tree stores its memories, because a tree has not a central nerve system like ours, and so talking about intelligence would go too far in the moment. But trees have memories, trees even can count, trees are able to learn, and even are able to pass their memories to other trees.
We're going to look at all of that. Peter Wohleben joins us. He is author of the book, The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, Discoveries from a Secret World, a bestseller in Germany, now being read all over the world. Behind us right here, Redwood Tree by Van Morrison. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Redwood Tree.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the secret life of trees, how they share, coordinate, communicate all around us, with a lifetime forester who knows them well. Peter Wohleben is with us. He's author of the best-selling book out of Germany, which is now hitting the U.S. and beyond. It's called The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, Discoveries from a Secret World. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Of course, people have always thought about trees in quite mystical ways sometimes, all over the world of fiction. Lord of the Rings, Two Towers movie out in 2002. Here you've got your hobbits chasing around Treebeard, the Ent.
It's talking, Mary. The tree is talking.
Tree? I am no tree. I am an Ent.
Tree herder. A shepherd of the forest.
Yes, we attribute all kinds of characteristics to trees. And the Ent there thinking they're the little orcs. Lots and lots of fiction and stories going way, way back in human history, but a lot of science as well. Just this last summer, here's Susan Simard. She's professor of forest ecology at the University of British Columbia, gave a TED Talk in Banff, Canada, about how she tested her theories of how trees communicate with one another. She used radioactive carbon to measure the flow and sharing of carbon between individual trees, and here she is explaining the first time she heard trees talk to one another.
Then the moment of truth. I went over to the fir tree. I pulled off its bag. I ran the Geiger counter up its needles, and I heard the most beautiful sound. It was the sound of Birch talking to Fir. And Birch was saying, "Hey, can I help you?" And Fir was saying, "Yeah, can you send me some of your carbon? Because somebody threw a shade cloth over me."
As a scientist going at it, Peter Voorleben has been in the forest for most of his life, and he says, yes, they're talking out there. You can join us. Peter, do trees communicate between species? It's what Suzanne seems to be indicating there, even between species?
That's not absolutely clear in the moment. It may be also that the fungi network is doing things the trees perhaps don't like. For example, when beech trees want to support each other, the fungi network brings a little sugar to other species because fungi needs trees to survive, and when a disease will bring the beech trees to die out, so the fungi network needs a plan B to rely on, and that may be oaks. And therefore, that may be one reason why other species are supported. But that's just a guess. I think the scientists are not discovered that so far.
It's an interesting range of responses to the way you characterize trees, all the way from, if Steve writes to us on Facebook, he says, "Didn't you see Avatar?" Where, of course, they got the Tree of Souls. Of course they talk. And he writes, "They talk more if you're on acid." So a little skepticism there. But Chris says, absolutely, the forest speaks through the mycelium. They use these networks to share nutrients and chemicals. We have so much to learn about what communication really means. And Longfeather writes to us, "I'm thinking about all the old live oaks I've sat under, or whose branches I've napped on, always feeling safe and held, can never remember being part of or overhearing an irritable conversation under the live oaks at the beach where my mother used to take us, or where I go to smell the surf. They're like a chapel that lets you feel calm." That almost indicates, and a lot of people I think may have felt this at one time or another, something like communication between trees and humans. Do you think so, Peter, or is that just an atmosphere that we enjoy?
That may be true. Trees are able to communicate with animals. And, for example, when an elm tree is bitten by a certain caterpillar, it tastes, because of the special saliva, which sort of caterpillar this is, and may call their predator. So that that are little wasps which flies to the elm and stitches lay their eggs into the caterpillars, and so the elm gets rid of those little worms.
So the tree calls a wasp which comes to eat the worm,
right,
the caterpillar.
Right. Yeah, and I think in former times our ancestors used to live in the woods, and just healthy wood is a good place to be. Wood which is weakened, which is unhealthy, may be destroyed within a storm, and that's a dangerous place to live. And I think we have senses to know whether a forest is in good condition or not. And the trees are communicating, especially when they are in danger, when they are suffering from a heavy drought, or when they are attacked by insects. And so I think we have some senses to smell it. And there's a strong research being done in Japan and Korea that, for example, in forests which are in a good condition, your blood pressure is sinking, your heartbeat is going down, and your completely body system is going to a better condition.
Bill in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, you're on the air with Peter Voorleben. Thank you for calling, Bill.
Thank you. Hello. Guten Tag, mein Herren. That's my little bit of German.
Okay,
there.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Bill. That was awesome.
I'm a degreed arborist and a certified arborist for about 30 years now. And I have 1,000 questions, but I'll limit it to two or three or one or two.
Okay, let's hear them.
If time allows. How do trees communicate as a response to pruning? In other words, removing live branches, surgery.
Yeah. Trees may respond to it. For example, there's a brand new research being done on deers which are biting branches. I think it's nearly the similar thing. They can find out which sort of animal is biting branches and then bring in a special acid to avoid this. I think they are not used to humans to cut branches, because this is doing this is, I think, at least some 100 years or maybe just some 1,000 years old. That means just a few tree generations, so that trees are not able to evolve in this.
You mean widespread pruning? I suppose if you go back far enough in human history, that we didn't bother to give trees haircuts.
Right, right. And therefore, the trees don't have any strategy against humans who are going to cut branches. But I think they feel it, they feel the pain, and they react, and one can measure that. And therefore, the best time to cut trees whenever one will do this is in summertime when trees are awake, because in winter when they are sleeping, they are not able to react.
Bill, what other questions have you got? You're our degreed arborist.
What species are more communicative? Are evergreens more or deciduous trees?
I think most of the trees which live in big forests are communicative. But some trees, for example, like willows or birch, they are very often loners, like lone wolves, and they are used to live on their own. And maybe, but the research is still at the beginning, maybe there's not too much communication among them because they are used to live on their own.
Bill, what have you learned from your direct observation as an arborist there in Oklahoma about trees and how they communicate?
Well, in my studies, I've learned that they communicate, as gentleman said, through pheromones, scents, and chemicals. And they can, I hearken back to that book back in, I think it was in 1974, was written, Secret Life of Plants.
Yeah.
And all kind. Are you familiar with that book, sir?
Yeah, just a little, yeah.
Yeah, it's... as far as personal observations, sometimes their communication is through gravity.
You mean they're going to drop a branch on you? What?
They're you have to be careful with gravity, either stuff falling on you or you falling out of the tree. I climb, so it's I have to be careful with physics, I guess.
Apart from falling out of a tree, as an arborist who's with trees all the time, I mean, the hidden life of plants, or the secret life of plants, is suggested that humans might even communicate with plants. Do you feel that with trees, Bill?
I talk to trees all the time, and I don't know that I get a word back from them, but I'm hoping that they can hear me, kind of like you might speak to a person that can't talk, you know, that they hear you, but they can't communicate with words back to you.
Not in your language, anyway.
That's correct. Yeah, maybe as if I was talking to a Scandinavian. but do they react more in their response as opposed to verbal communication?
Yeah, I know that feeling of communicating. Back on the farm in Illinois, I've got a kind of a giant old sycamore there, gnarly giant old sycamore, who's I think of as sort of a spirit tree. I feel very related to that tree, very tied since childhood to that tree. But Peter Wohleben, is that just poetic, romantic fancy?
I would be careful to judge this, but I think trees are too slow for communicating with us, for a communication, because when you remember the slow traveling electrical signals, mm-hmm. I think you have to talk days after days to a tree that the tree can understand one word. It's too slow for us. I think to make a comparison, trees and humans are like flies and humans. Flies are too fast for us and make zzz, and you even mm-hmm. can't catch it. And for a tree, we are like a fly. We go to the tree and we just in the next moment we are away. And so, if you want to hug a tree, I think we have to hug it for days so that the tree might recognize that you are there. It may be a connection. I don't want to judge it because we know that trees are interacting with animals and we are mm-hmm. a sort of an animal. So why not? But it takes time. We have to calm down. And I think that's a good idea to rest under a tree, to stay under a tree, and perhaps something wonderful happened.
Well, I've been coming back to that tree for many years now. Chris in Wallingford, Connecticut. Chris, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I'm I'm curious. We live in an age of so many negative tendencies, such as racism and you know, just negative attributes like that. I'm curious if we can see or learn from something like that in trees. Do they decide what information they relay to other trees when they communicate with other species or other trees within their same species? Are they selective with what they'll communicate?
Peter, what about it? Bias or prejudice or selective assistance between trees of different stripes?
I think the trees differ between friends and not friends and family members and non-family members. But in general, they are all working together and they are very social without thinking to themselves by supporting other trees. There are no racists or racism among trees. What we all sometimes think is when, for example, beech trees harass oak trees, but oak trees are as far away from beech trees like humans and goldfish, for example. But different races of beech trees, for example, I think they will cooperate. And for a tree, it's more important to save the forest than to save itself.
Did you say that beech trees harass oak trees?
Yeah.
How? Why?
I see it very often. Because beech trees maybe, don't take care about other species because they want to take their water, their light. Therefore, they grow with the roots under the roots of oak trees. They grow with their branches through the crown of an oak tree. They switch off their light. They take their water, and the oak tree will starve to death, and that takes decades. And you will see the oak tree panic, get fear, and then it builds little branches that are called in a technical term fear branches. That's long known to foresters. And then when you see this, you know this oak gets panic, and this oak will die within the next decade.
So beech trees are kind of like imperialists, and yet don't you take care of a beech wood now, a beech forest in Germany?
Yes, right.
Or does that make you a dark lord of the beech imperialists?
No, I'm not Darth Vader. the beech tree is in the moment the strongest tree in Middle Europe. And perhaps within the next 100 years, the oak trees will gain the territory. We don't know that. Trees are very slow. The beech trees are still coming back from the last ice age to the north. In the moment, they have reached southern Scandinavia, southern Sweden. And if we let them go far north, I think within the next 100 years, they will be in middle Sweden and afterwards in northern Sweden, and will be followed by the oak in the same time that it gets warmer now because of climate change. So it's a fluent thing, I don't want to judge the beech trees. I don't want to judge the oak trees, but I just watch them, what they are doing, and they are doing it very, very slow.
Beech trees slowly on the march. Mike in Boston. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on.
Thanks, Tom, for taking my call. And this is a very interesting subject because I often look at the trees and the way they touch. Now, I have cucumber plants, and they have these crazy little feelers. And next to my cucumbers are tomatoes. And I noticed I can't move my tomatoes, and they stop growing because the cucumber feelers have latched on to the tomato plants. And I'd like to know what your caller thinks about plants being aggressive.
I mean, we already heard about beech trees going after oak trees. Literally, Peter, reaching out and touching one another, even physically wrestling over space?
That may occur, yeah, right. So that they even touch with their branches, but that's not good for the trees because when the wind goes through the trees and they were shaken by the wind, their branch will be destroyed and damaged of both trees. So usually they take distance. There are trees which wipe off their neighbors, like birch trees, for example. The branches hang down and they wipe their neighbors so that the crown of the neighbors will be destroyed. Yeah, that happens.
We've got a little tree music for you here. German artist and engineer Bartholomaus Traubeck created a record player that creates music by playing the rings of a tree. This is his years. I don't know what a tree would think about that or feel about that. Peter Voorleben is with us. He is author of the new book, The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, Discoveries from a Secret World. He says they have memory, they count, they learn, they pass on memories. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking about the secret life of trees, how they share, coordinate, communicate all around us. With a lifetime forester who knows them very well, Peter Voorleben is with us. He is author of the book, The Hidden Life of Trees, a surprise bestseller in Germany and now getting attention all over the place. He says, trees talk, they have memory, they count, they learn. Can you believe it? 800-423-8255. Humans always the sense of a connection to trees. Hear from Dr. Seuss's Lorax, the film from 1972. The Lorax fights to protect the forest from the Onceler. Here's the Lorax, voiced by Bob Holt, introducing himself while the Onceler cuts down the trees around him.
I speak for the trees. Let them grow. Let them grow. But nobody listens too much, don't you know? I speak for the trees, and I'll yell and I'll shout for the fine things on earth that are on their way out.
Well, yes, many have been harvested. Josh writes to us on Twitter after listening to you, Peter. He says, all these years I've been hugging trees and never considered that they would want to hug back. Donna's calling from Staunton, Virginia. Donna, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Tom. It's nice to speak with you.
You too.
This is an interesting topic. I just experienced the demise of lots of trees from beavers. And I live next to a stream, and it's a creek, actually. And I have just discovered a beaver dam with hundreds of trees that have been felled to make this dam. And my question to your guest is, do you let Mother Nature take its course, or to save the trees' life, do you eliminate a rodent that's very destructive?
In this case, beavers. Mm-hmm.
Take trees down. I've seen a couple of them that are 20 inches in girth.
Wow.
And then they have felled these huge trees, and they just use the very tips. They don't use the big fat part, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just, it's very saddening to see.
Donna, thank you for your call. Peter, it's a jungle out there. The red in tooth and claw, competition is always on. How do you look at that one between beavers and trees?
I would later let do its thing. I have a coffee cup from the United States, and there's written on, save a tree, eat a beaver, but I won't do that. No, when we leave the forest and the woodlands on their own, then it's not so important if a beaver fell some trees. A beaver may be important for the forest because it regulates the water flows. And so more water will stay in the special region where a beaver lives. So a beaver is important for the forest, but okay, I give you right, that for the single trees which are felled by the beaver, that makes, and that's a hard life, and the life is over. But for the whole forest, a beaver can be very good. So therefore, I would let Mother Nature do its things. And from this example, we see that the reservations that we need for forests has to be big enough so that there are maybe single spots where a beaver lives and perhaps even destroy a little of the forest.
You speak of trees having memory. What do you mean by that?
For example, when trees suffer of a heavy drought, then the wood cracks, and that hurts a tree. And as we learn best, even if it's not nice, when we feel pain, we don't want to feel this pain again and avoid things which causes this pain. And a tree has the same strategy. He has in the soil under his roots plenty of water from wintertime saved in the soil. And in springtime, he can consume it. A big beech tree, for example, may need as much as 500 liters per day. But when such a beech tree suffered from a heavy drought, it will change its water management in the years after and save more water for a maybe dry summer, and remembers that for its whole lifespan.
What about counting? You talk about trees counting. What do you mean by that?
That's a discovery from the University of Bochum in Germany. They researched apple trees, and every spring, apple trees need to build new leaves, and the tree don't know whether it will be a late frost or not, and the late frost will destroy the new leaves, so the tree has to rebuild it again. And therefore, the tree counts the warm days, and just when a certain amount of warm days is reached, it will comes out with its new leaves. And that causes two things. A tree has to count for this, and it has to have a memory, because otherwise it would count every day one.
You talked about passing on memory. What do you mean by that? That it's passed on to subsequent generations, or how?
Right. A mother tree may pass its memory, its experience to other trees, to the younger generation, so that it doesn't need to learn every lesson by itself. And therefore, maybe that is the reason why this old stump is supported by the trees surrounding it, because the stump is at least twice or three times as old as the trees surrounding it, and has perhaps two or three times more memories than the younger trees, and therefore it's valuable for the community.
Behind all these observations, you seem to be trying to get us to look at trees in a different way. What's the change in our thinking that you would like to prompt?
I would like people to look at trees like to look on elephants. When we look on trees nowadays, we think, they are oxygen producer, they are timber producer, they are water purifier. They are just there to serve us. But what do we think when we look at an elephant? An elephant is a beautiful animal, and no one thinks what it will bring benefits for us. And I want to change the look on trees like on plant elephants. And I think every one of us has the next tree not far away than 200 or 300 meters. And therefore, everyone can enjoy trees.
But so much of our environment, our built environment, is made of wood, especially in the United States. We've cut down enormous forests here. A listener writes to us on Dan on Twitter, says, how do forests recover from clear cuts and harvesting? Most of New England, the state he lives in, was cleared at one time. Forests in much of this country cleared, and in Germany too, for that matter, in very large part. What's the consequence?
The consequences, the recovery needs at last 500 years. That's just one tree generation. Seeing it from the tree side, it's very fast. Seeing it from the human side, it takes a lot of time to recover. But there is hope that it will work. But we need to leave the trees alone, and that's the most important thing. We are not used to stand there with our hands in the pockets and do nothing to do anything good. And that is what we have to learn. We have to have time for recover, and we have to set us a step aside.
What about the way forests are replanted, though, these days? When we have commercial forests, you raise some concerns about that in the book.
Yeah, planted forests are no forest. Before planting, usually the roots will be cut to that the tree can be easier be planted because the root system will be cut to a smaller size. And when you cut roots, the brain-like structures on the root tips is also cut away. And
the
brain-like structures.
Okay,
yeah, brain-like
tips,
structures. Yeah. That is the zone where the trees may contact with each other and find out who is relatives and who are not. And when you cut it away, it will be rebuilt, but not with a fully function. And therefore, those trees are for the whole lifetime disabled. And they won't become very old, and they won't build up those wonderful societies. And therefore, it's important that we grew a new forest out of seeds and not out of plants.
But I mean, I've seen whole, for example, orchards, apple orchards in Germany, yeah. which were unbelievably manicured. It looked like lines of soldiers standing perfectly so, the branches just up as if hands up, don't shoot, that kind of... I've never seen anything like it in North America. That deep manicuring, lots of trees there, but deeply, deeply disciplined into a certain productive order. What about that?
Yeah, that's just for the forest industry, and that is okay. For example, when you eat your bread in the morning at the place where the wheat grows, usually in former time there was a primeval forest. And but we are humans, we have mm-hmm. certain rights. We may mm-hmm. take something out of nature, and that may be also timber. But when we want to do something good for nature, then we have to leave our hands in our pockets and say, okay, this place is for nature, there we don't take anything out. And the other places are reserved for our needs, and that's also okay. And so we have to get it in a good balance. And that is the point which concerns me at the moment.
Louise in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Thank you for calling, Louise. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
As I'm listening, I receive a passionate case for ecosystem preservation. Mm. And it begs the question, what are the effects of pesticides and, for instance, cell phone electromagnetic frequencies on trees? Has that been studied?
Peter?
The electromagnetic frequencies are not so well researched in the moment. Insecticides are well researched. They destroy the whole community. When we look in the forest, for example, this old beech forest where I'm responsible of, we have more than 10,000 animal species living in the ground. And when you use pesticides, you will kill them all. And the electromagnetic waves will cause any damage, but we don't know how much and which sort of damage. Because trees are, like us, working with electrical signals within their bodies, and so it must disturb in any way this communication, but we don't know how so far.
Let's go to Denver, Colorado. Teresa's calling. Hi, Teresa, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Well, what do you know?
You know, this. I love the fact that you're having this conversation today. I am totally in support of everything that you're talking about, Peter, as well as Tom on the show. I have myself, I'm not a researcher, but I have just started doing a couple years ago doing some pilot research on the healing effects of the music that plant plays. So I have a biofeedback system that has been adapted to measure the electrical resistance of vegetable tissue. And when it's connected to a plant, it takes the signal that the plant is emitting and then translates that into sound via a synthesizer, actually giving the plant a voice. And then the plant becomes the musician and the biofeedback system becomes the instrument. And through listening to trees and other plants playing music, I had a curiosity about what kind of effect would it have on the body and the mind if someone listened to that music. And so I did several pilot studies a few years ago that show that the immune system gets stronger when we listen to trees and plants play music, and that our body goes through this detoxification process, as well as several other things that happen as well. So I'm very intrigued by the trees, because that is how I got introduced to this. So I'm really thankful that you guys are doing this show.
Teresa, let us pick it up. Peter, where do you go with that? Teresa hooks up her gizmo, and suddenly she's got plant music, tree music, or at least something that we can make out through a synthesizer. What about, I don't know, what do you think?
I didn't heard that music so far, but that sounds really interesting. I'm still a forester, and I have to learn such a lot of things. It's like always in scientific life, you answer one question and you get 10 new ones, and therefore I'm always happy to get new things to know, like the music of plants. That sounds really great. I think I have to research it in the internet, and but so far I don't have any knowledge about this.
Is sound any part of the communication that you do describe, or is it all chemical and root tip and scent?
The latest research from Australia says that plants, and therefore even trees, may communicate even with sounds. There were wheat roots researched, and they make click sounds within a frequency of 220 hertz. then the roots of the other plants will grow in this direction. So there has to be any communication, but that's a very first step in research.
You're managing a beechwood now where traditional harvesting techniques, I guess, are not used. I know you were promoting cutting and just bringing horses in to take them out. Is that commercially viable, or what's the point of your forest now?
Yeah, really. I don't think in the first step what benefits it will be bring in form of money. But for the little village where I'm responsible, it brings a lot of more money, because a healthier forest grows more wood and better wood quality, and therefore it's really better for profit to use horses instead of big harvesting machines.
Because why? Because the trees are happier? Because they don't hear trucks driving through, or what?
When you drive with a truck over the forest soil, it will be compressed like a swamp, and it's compressed and never will recover. And for example, it may save less water from winter time. The roots can't go in because there's no oxygen left, and the soil won't recover from those damages from machines. Just after the next ice age. So, and seen from the human view, wooden soils are destroyed forever. And I don't want to be responsible for such a destruction. And therefore, I use horses.
Peter Volebin, who has spent a lot of time in the woods, brought a lot of research together, and come out with a kind of telling of the social life of trees that is getting people's attention all over the place now. It's been really a pleasure talking with you about trees and forests and the social life of trees. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Tom.
The book is The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, Discoveries from a Secret World. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. You can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm on Twitter at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. You can be the first to find out tomorrow's topics and guests by going to our Facebook page, On Point Radio. Hit the like button and you'll get alerts on upcoming shows right there in your news feed. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Catherine Brewer, Julie Jopp, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonas, Sarah Platt, Caitlin O'Keefe, James Ross, and Abby Ruzica, with help from Haliva Gikandi, Weiwa Lee, and Maeve Pajess. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.